It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Sandy Rios with you on this Wednesday morning, and I just want to tell you that the left is on the march, in case you hadn't noticed. They didn't get the memo about the election, and they are not stopping. We've seen them. There is a campaign to destroy conservative hosts. They are going after advertisers. I saw a 90-page document just this week put out by Media Matters, which, of course, listens to this show every morning and follows it and always posts, you know, as much negative as they can possibly about me and about the show. But they have managed in the process of taking out Glenn Beck. They've tried to take out Rush Limbaugh. They managed to take down Bill O'Reilly. We know for sure that they targeted him in the same way. And, of course, they're coming after conservative speakers on college campuses like Ann Coulter and others, where the threats are really getting very serious and the violence is increasing, as in Berkeley. And then, of course, they're coming after Trump supporters who are just being, you know, there are countless stories about Trump supporters just wearing hats or waving flags being attacked. They're coming after our Jewish friends, and they're certainly coming after Christians. And they are coming after conservative organizations. Remember, just a few years ago, FRC was invaded by a would-be mass murderer because of FRC's stand on gay marriage. And yesterday, Heritage Foundation, which is a think tank in Washington, actually, I have to say, they are some of my best friends at Heritage. They are sort of the think tank behind the Trump administration right now. They were behind the Bush administration also. They come up with the position papers. They do research. They contribute invaluably to the country. Well, yesterday at Heritage, outside and inside, it sounded like this.
In 2018, no more annual grants will mean a complete cut to CDBG.
That ain't right.
The Heritage plan calls for a total elimination of HUD funding over the next 10 years, or 10% a year. Totally cutting HUD is not only not right, it is a covert way for the 1% to privatize, control, and create laws that criminalize the poor. Boo!
Boo.
Without creating a solution. Trump also says that he recognizes a greater role for state and local governments and private sectors to address and fund community and economic.
All right, we're going to interrupt. Well, that was inside the building because they managed to get in. At least 100, if not 200 of them managed to get inside the building and take over the lobby. Hans von Spakovsky, our good friend, who's the senior legal fellow at Heritage, has joined us last minute this morning because, Hans, I just had to know, who were these people that invaded Heritage yesterday?
Well, in essence, they were a rent-a-mob. This was organized by a group called People's Action. It's affiliated with some other groups. These are basically an Alinskyite-type organization organized in Chicago that's taken huge amounts of money from Soros, and they were apparently actually in town for a convention at a very expensive hotel, which I think is kind of funny since they were protesting supposed budget cuts. But they were at a very expensive hotel at a convention paid for by unions, like the National Education Association, Communications Workers of America. And they came over to Heritage. The Daily Caller actually got one of their reporters onto the bus undercover. And apparently the protesters were told, well, here's where we're going, and here's the things you need to protest. Oh, and by the way, here are your signs. So the whole thing, like I said, it really was a rent-a-mob. They did get into the reception area of Heritage. They were protesting outside. What hasn't been mentioned in the news reports is that some folks at Heritage on the upper floor, some of the analysts, actually quickly made up some signs that said repeal Obamacare and held them up to the window, and that apparently really infuriated the crowd.
Well, all right. And so there were some humorous moments. Were any of them dressed, you know, as we see in a lot of these protest riots, including on the inauguration, we saw people with black masks, you know, shielding their faces. Did you see any of that?
No, I didn't see that. But what I did see were lots of people holding up their fists, which looked like the Black Power salute of the 1960s. And, you know, that's something that should vastly concern people, that that kind of what bordered on the terrorist sympathies of those groups in the 1960s are sprinkled into these groups.
It reminds me of what Loretta Lynch said. Remember, before she left the Attorney General's office, she was encouraging people to, maybe it was after, she's made a statement in the last few months here about we should be more like the civil rights movements of the 60s. We should take on their methods, which is exactly what they're doing. Fahans, were you guys, did you know it was coming at all? Did you have any warning?
No, we didn't. What happened was a couple of people just walked into the reception area and asked the receptionist to meet with Jim DeMint, who's the head of the organization, and they were told he wasn't available. They turned around as if they were going out, went to the doors, and held the doors open, and a huge crowd quickly came into the building and flooded the building. Several of our folks who were trying to get into the building were pushed and shoved by the crowd and not allowed to get into the office themselves.
So were they able to get in then to, you know, you have a reception area, which is lovely and pretty large, and you have a guard there, but then you do have doors that are shut off, and then you've got, if you get into the inner part, you know, you have access to the various floors. Did they get that far where they could access the other floors?
No, they weren't. They were confined to the reception area, although I did hear a funny story from one of our security guards at one point. You know, here these people are invading our office, engaging in this protest, and at one point one of the women in the crowd came up to our security guard and asked him if she could use the bathroom.
Sorry. Well, that is pretty funny. But now you're laughing at this, but actually this is very serious, Hans. And
it is.
You see these protesters invading buildings all over. I think of the famous Wisconsin Capitol protests where they just took the building over. What does the law say? Can people just invade a private entity like that and take over? Isn't that breaking some sort of a law?
Oh, sure. It's trespassing, and it's an invasion of private property. And in places like Washington, yeah, of course you're allowed to protest. That's part of the First Amendment of the American Way. But if you're going to organize a protest, for example, outside a particular building, you're supposed to apply to the city to get a permit to do that so that they can make sure that there's adequate security there, that you're not going to cause traffic problems, et cetera. I know that some of the businesses around Heritage were very upset about this because it drove away their customers. So actually these people who are supposedly out there protesting for regular Americans were actually hurting the small business folks all around Heritage.
Well, and the disadvantage for organizations like Heritage potentially will be that the leadership in the District of Columbia is not going to be on the side of conservatives. And I was just reading this morning, like the mayor of Berkeley, where so many of these riots have taken place, and it looks like they're getting ready for another one, whether Ann Coulter comes to speak or not. The new mayor of that town, of Berkeley, is a member of the Facebook group By Any Means Necessary, which is the very group that's doing the violence. So the new mayor is part of that group, and that's maybe an extreme. But the point is, you guys really are kind of on your own. Family Research Council, any of the conservative groups there, I don't think are going to get a lot of support from D.C. authorities. Maybe you would disagree, but that's the way I see that.
Well, I don't think it's as bad as what's going on in Berkeley. And I do have to say the Metropolitan Police yesterday responded very quickly and were at the scene. But the other thing that people ought to realize about this is that, look, this is really a Democratic Party operation. the people who were speaking at the convention that these protesters were at were it was Bernie Sanders, Senator Jeff Merkley of Oregon, former Clinton official Van Jones. And when the protesters left us, they went to attend a lunch to hear a speech from Keith Ellison, the Democrat from Minnesota who now is helping to run the DNC. So this was clearly a Democratic Party operation, even though they call themselves a nonpartisan group.
Oh, well, there's more, a lot more we could say about that, but I have to ask you about another big event yesterday. You know, this is the week we knew there was going to be a lot of news, and it hasn't disappointed, and we're just on Wednesday morning. But let me just say to my engineer, let's delay this break by about 5 minutes, if that's okay, and please tell our next guest we'll be 5 minutes late, because I want to talk to Hans about this. Yesterday, a federal judge on Tuesday blocked this Trump administration order, which would withhold funding from communities that limit cooperation with U.S. immigration authorities. In other words, these sanctuary cities. So here's another judge, U.S. District Judge William Orrick, issuing this, stopping the breaking of the law of these cities who refuse to enforce immigration law and are ignoring federal law, which is passed by both houses of Congress, signed by previous presidents, refusing to honor those laws. And now a judge in San Francisco, friendly San Francisco, has stopped the whole business. Hans, how can this be? How can this be happening again?
Well, it probably wouldn't surprise anybody to know this judge is someone who was appointed by Barack Obama. And everyone ought to understand that Barack Obama appointed the most liberal, the most radical activists to the federal bench in our entire history. And they now sit on almost close to 40% of the federal courts across the country. And all of these cases in which orders are being issued to stop President Trump in the immigration area, all these cases are being filed out in the West in places like Hawaii and California and Washington State because they know they're in the Ninth Circuit, which is the most liberal appeals court in the country. Look, these are bad judges. They're activists. They don't care about the Constitution. They don't care about the law. All they care about is using their power in the judiciary to push forward the social progressive agenda. And right now, that agenda is to basically stop anything and everything that the president is doing. What will hopefully happen with this case is it will be appealed. The Ninth Circuit will no doubt rule against the president. It will then go to the Supreme Court on an emergency appeal. And now that we have Neil Gorsuch there, hopefully the Supreme Court will finally step in and stop what's been going on in the lower courts.
Oh, we hope so. We just hope so. You know, this judge that was appointed by Obama, he wasn't only appointed by him. My understanding is that he donated a lot of money to Barack Obama in his campaign. He's also the judge that ordered the blocking the release of the videos of Planned Parenthood. So he's made quite a mark for himself already in his early career, being an appointee by Obama. You know, that brings me to another question, Hans. My understanding is that President Trump now will have the ability to nominate, shall we say, hundreds of federal court judges. What
yeah,
do you know
about 130 open spots.
Oh, 130. All right. So what do you know about the progress on that?
Well, there's actually, I think, a hearing going on today on one of his first other appointees. This is for an appellate court position. It's a judge, federal judge from Kentucky. He has not yet sent over any nominees for these many other positions. My understanding is that what I hear from folks on the inside is that they have actually picked and selected a large number of nominees. But right now, they're all going through the background investigations you have to do, and that's got to be completed before they announce them. I expect what's going to happen is sometime relatively soon, there's going to be a big flood of nominations coming out of the White House and headed over to the Senate Judiciary Committee.
Okay, well, back to Heritage before I let you go. Is there any legal recourse? Did they do anything that you can bring charges against them for, or did they just get away with what they did yesterday?
Oh, you know, I think they just got away with what they did. I can't speak for whether the organization will take any action or anything else, but But it's very clear that they weren't very successful in their protests at all. They certainly aren't going to change the course that we're taking, which is pushing for a responsible budget that tries to get our budget deficit finally under control. I mean, some of the stuff they did was just silly. I'll just say one final thing. At one point, they were chanting, "Water, not walls," which I'm not quite sure what the heck that's supposed to refer to, other than the fact that they were out and they got what they wanted. It started pouring rain on them.
Oh, that's interesting. You know, I heard that. I read that part of the chant. I wondered if it was about that water situation in the community in Michigan. All right. So, Hans, listen, thanks for joining me last minute this morning. I really appreciate it so much. And I guess it's just a good reminder that in D.C., on the front lines, there is danger. And sometimes I think, you know, we do a lot of talking, those of us in this movement. We talk about a lot of things, but really there is risk with what we're doing. And I think that we're beginning to sense that a little bit more each and every day. So, but you guys are doing great work, and we thank God for Heritage Foundation, and thank God that nothing more happened yesterday.
Well, thanks for having me on, Sandy.
My pleasure. Okay, Hans von Spakovsky, Senior Legal Analyst at the Heritage Foundation. All right, we can take our break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the fact that the government shutdown allegedly was going to take place at midnight on Friday if they didn't come to an agreement. Well, they sort of seem like they've come to an agreement because there's been so much capitulation by Republicans to Democrats. We're going to talk about that. We're also going to be talking about the fact that the president's 100-day mark is this Friday. So how has he performed? What has he done? If you talk to some people, they say he's done nothing. It's been terrible. It's been chaos. And you talk to others and they say, look, this is good. We are grateful. In fact, 97% of his voters in a poll just this week said they would vote for him again. They're glad. They have no regrets. And so it's an interesting topic. We're going to talk about it with Rick Manning in just a second. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
His mother was brutally raped. Hi, Kim Cotola for Cradle My Heart Today, and the year was 1970. Although abortion wasn't legal, many women could find one back then. But Ryan Bomberger's mom chose life. Today, Ryan says, I'm the fringe case even pro-lifers have a hard time embracing. But when we believe in the sacredness of human life from the moment of conception, the circumstances do not matter. He says, despite the horror of being raped, she courageously chose to give me life, and there will never be enough words to thank her. Ryan's adoptive parents cherished and nurtured his life. And today, Ryan says, adoption unleashes purpose because no child is ultimately unwanted. Every life is wanted by someone. Find out more of Ryan's story and resources for adoption at CradleMyHeart.org. Saving lives and healing hearts after abortion, one story at a time. CradleMyHeart.org.
I've been around a long time, and most of that time, I've been looking for a hero. Somebody who always did it right, who was always wise, who was really tight with God. I gave it up. They're just like me. And that can be depressing, but it's okay. Jesus said I shouldn't worship at anybody's altar but his. I can live with that. Besides, worshiping anybody but him fouls up relationships. So much better if those who are loved by Jesus love each other without unrealistic expectations. If you're as messed up as I am, we can be friends. I'm Steve Brown. You think about that. Share what you just heard with a friend. Go to youthinkaboutthat.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Dr. Robert Bowen.
I am the Dean of Science, Technology, Engineering, and Mathematics, and I'm an Associate Professor of Physiology. So one of the benefits of being a faculty member at TMU is not only are we allowed to speak the gospel in the classroom and within our areas of discipline, we're encouraged to do so. Everybody needs to know the love of Christ. And so I try to incorporate in my classes, and one of the places that I incorporate in the most is in my office when I have students come in.
Are you called? Visit truitt.edu today.
From Herndon, Virginia, a terrible story. Police say a 12-year-old girl was sexually abused 5 times at a home daycare. And the suspect is an illegal alien. An illegal alien who had a criminal record. An illegal alien who had previously been deported. Immigration Customs Enforcement says the suspect had felony convictions for, among other things, attempted robbery. So why was this guy allowed to roam our streets? Who let the guy back into the country? My blood is boiling, America. How many more citizens are going to be victimized? How many more little children are going to be violated? It's beyond time for our elected leaders to address border security. It's time to put politics aside and protect American citizens. So call your elected leaders. Tell them it's time to build the wall. Brick by brick, build the wall. Stop illegal predators from hurting another 12-year-old child on American soil. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
I would like to introduce a man who I truly believe will be outstanding in every way and will be the next Vice President of the United States. Governor Mike Pence. Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Thank you.
Donald Trump's first choice for his team he made 6 months before Inauguration Day, and it was, by many accounts, his smartest.
I want to thank you, Vice President Pence, for your wonderful introduction, but maybe more importantly, for your incredible service to our country. You have done an incredible job.
Across the first 100 days, Vice President Mike Pence has served multiple roles in the Trump White House as a bridge to congressional Republicans and movement conservatives, a key player in judicial nominations like that of Supreme Court Justice Neil Gorsuch.
The shield stands guard, and the sword stands ready.
And a reassuring presence on trips to Europe and Asia to allies overseas.
I do think that Vice President Mike Pence is probably his greatest asset, and that should certainly be kind of engaged at every level.
In an interview with Fox News, the only member of the Trump team who cannot be fired said he speaks to the president nearly every day.
I mean, to be around President Trump is to be around someone who is constantly generating ideas and tasks and giving direction.
All right, well, that's the first part of James Rosen's report last night, a special report. He's doing kind of a rundown on the first 100 days. In fact, Brad is doing kind of a series on this. And his point, of course, was that one of the best things that the president has done is appoint Michael Pence. Then he goes on to the other nominees. But there's a lot more to be said. I mean, I wonder what you think about the first 100 days of the president's being in control. Well, trying to take control. Let's just say that. How would you grade him? At some point, maybe we'll open the phone lines tomorrow about that. But today I want to talk to Rick Manning, who's the president of Americans for Limited Government. Because Rick has just done a piece in Fox News called Trump's First 100 Days, A Crash Course in Creative Destruction, and he joins us this morning. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning, Sandy. How are you?
I'm good. You know, before we get into your point, which I think is a great one, I don't know how anyone could argue that a man could work any harder and at least attempt to do more than Donald Trump has attempted to do. I mean, it's breathtaking, really, isn't it?
You know, it really is. You know, every day he's confronting a problem that previous administrations have called intractable, problems left behind not just from Obama or Bush, but all the way back from the Clinton term that have festered, and he's taking them on head on and attempting to change the dynamics in terms of how problems are solved around the world. And I think he's setting up the possibility of being the best president since Ronald Reagan in many, many ways. And that's the, you know, yet there are those who judge him based on really old models of how many bills Chuck Schumer will let him pass through Congress. And that's a model that doesn't make any sense. Donald Trump is a different president.
Yeah.
And he is approaching things differently. And, you know, it's Congress that needs to get on board and start getting their job done.
You know, honestly, Rick, I just think it's astonishing, really, when you think about the opposition to him, the hatred, really, in the press, the never-ending battering ram of criticism and ridicule that he's experienced in television, from Hollywood, from the major news sources. You know, MRC Media Research did a study on what the amounts of coverage and the kinds of coverage, and it's just stunning, even when you quantify their hatred and vitriol. So in spite of that, sabotage by the federal judiciary, which we just experienced another one in the last 24 hours on the Sanctuary City ruling, and even within his own White House, sabotage, leaking, and all of that, it is really breathtaking what he has accomplished. So let's talk about it a little bit. You call it, you use the term creative destruction, and it's actually a very good term when you explain it. So explain it to us.
Sure. Creative destruction is a term that normally refers to capitalism, and it is a normal outcome of capitalism. It's when a company or companies, the economy, or various people, find better ways to do the same thing, driving out the old way as being inefficient. It's when new products come in that usurp the place of old products that no longer can compete because they aren't as good, they aren't as cheap, they aren't as they just don't work as well. And so that's the natural outcome of capitalism. It's why we have vehicles that end up becoming better over time than the ones that were originally built, although some could argue that 60s and 70 muscles cars are the best cars ever built. But but I won't go there. So you have you see just the constant improvement. You see the Moore's Law in technology, where the speed of a chip doubles every 3 years, and so you're just seeing the incredible capacity, the exponential growth of various industries and various opportunities. And he sees that his whole upbringing isn't about dealing with old systems. His upbringing is how do you take systems, rip them apart to make them work better. And that's what he's doing. Now, I don't believe you can make government actually work because it's designed not to. But I do believe that Donald Trump is looking at everything with fresh eyes and saying, why are we doing it this way? And what has this regulation actually accomplished besides destroying the economy? And by looking at everything with fresh eyes, I think he's making an extraordinary changes in the way that our economy is going to work and the way that our relations with countries around the world.
You know, Rick, I think in many ways, it's also the quintessential case of someone who is making others look really bad. I mean, just with his work ethic. You know, up early in the morning, not sleeping at night, busy, you know, tweeting on television late at night, in meetings all day, flying all over the country, flying, you know, across the globe, making just in a day, it's dizzying. And then you go to the other side, you know, a few blocks away, and there's the Congress, like the House, who worked 7 days in April. He makes them look really foolish. He really does. And so if he's done nothing else, he's sort of exposed the laziness that is Washington. But let's go back to what he's actually accomplished. Do you think that the Neil Gorsuch nomination is number one on his accomplishment list?
Yeah, I think the Neil Gorsuch confirmation is number one. I think it may go down in history as being the single most important Supreme Court justice vote in the Senate that we've ever had, for the simple reason that it's likely, it's at least probable, that that this president's going to have at least two more Supreme Court nominations to fill, which means he will have one-third of the court that he nominates. He's not restricted by what Chuck Schumer thinks because they eliminated the filibuster on the Supreme Court nomination. As a result, the nominees should be considerably more conservative than what the Democrats could have forced otherwise. So we now have an opportunity to create a generational change on the court. And when you have the opportunity to create generational changes, you're talking, you're not just talking short term, you're talking, not, you know, for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
Creating an environment where the Kauai case, the case out of San Francisco, when they head up to the Supreme Court, those cases are going, they're going to lose. And they're creating case law by virtue of the stupid decisions they're making. They're just basically venal anti-Trump decisions rather than the law. They're going to allow case law to be made that is rock solid for 30 years about the relative powers of government and how it works. So I think it's really a powerful opportunity for government to, for this administration to change everything. And I think we've got the president who's willing to do it.
You know, actually, if he did nothing else, this would transform the country. You know, and to your point of creative destruction, you make the point, which is well taken, that in the process of nominating Neil Gorsuch, this judicial filibuster was eliminated, which is something that Mitch McConnell did not want to do. I mean, he's made it clear for, we've been talking about this for, I don't know how long he's been speaker, but I mean, majority leader, but it's, he's been minority leader and majority leader a very long time. And they did not want to get rid of this procedure. And they did over the Neil Gorsuch nominee, which is what you'd call creative destruction. And Rick, while we're on that, just before we go to your next point, why do you think, is there value in holding on to this filibuster thing when it comes to legislation? When you consider, for instance, the battle to not shut down the government at midnight on Friday, would, if we had broken the judicial filibuster, we wouldn't have to worry about what the but what Chuck Schumer and the Senate thought. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I'm in favor of completely revamping the filibuster, and I've come out in favor of eliminating it. I think it's a tool that has consistently been used against limited government. It locks in government programs and expansions of government without allowing for real pullbacks and when we discover they don't work, Obamacare being the best example. What we see with the legislative filibuster is they really have changed it significantly since the original filibuster. And at the very least, as a compromise, they should force it to go back to the way it was. And the way it was you had to stand on the floor and actually hold the floor. You couldn't do a gentleman's agreement and do cloture votes and all that stuff. If you wanted to filibuster something, you had to hold the floor of the Senate, and the majority would keep the floor open 24/7 until you dropped. That was a filibuster. And, you know, until we choose to go back to forcing people to really filibuster, then you have automatic gridlock because there's no cost to the minority to just vote for a filibuster to block a bill. But the minute you have that, you exhaust it by running them 24/7, and you run them into the ground physically, as the filibuster was intended to do. At that point, you change everything, and suddenly there'd be a lot more judicious about what the minority chooses to filibuster. And as a result, we'll be able to get a whole lot more of our agenda done.
All right. Well, that's interesting, and a conversation for another time to take that up. But let's go back to Donald Trump's first 100 days. You love his budget. I mean, at least you like the skinny budget, don't you, Rick? You think that's a great accomplishment?
I do. I think the skinny budget is a great accomplishment, and it's you know, there's some places you could tweak it. But here's the key to it. He has effectively said, we're remaking government. And these are small dollar items, but I think they're really important. You know, National Endowment of Arts, no funding. National Corporation for Public Broadcasting, no funding. National Endowment of the Humanities, no funding. And while it may seem symbolic, it's symbolic in terms of this budget. What Donald Trump did is he said, not because of Robert Mapplethorpe or anything else, he asked a simple question. He said, should a coal miner in West Virginia pay for the amusements of my New York City buddies? And the answer was no. You know, these are all transfers of wealth from the middle class, working class, who pay most of the taxes, to the wealthy who could pay for it otherwise. And so he looked and he said, there's no play, this doesn't make sense to force the guy I met at a coal field of West Virginia to pay for something that my wealthy buddies could pay for without even feeling it. And that's an essential change in attitude about government and how it should function. And it really goes to the heart of the corporate cronyism, where if you have the right people placed on the right boards, you can basically coerce government to get anything done because you don't want to offend the right people. Donald Trump doesn't care. He says, I want to do the right thing for the people, not just the right people. And that's the transformational thing about his skinny budget, and it's what I hope the Congress will wake up to and say, yeah, we need to do this. This makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, the Congress. We're going to get to that in just a second, I hope. Let me just say that you enumerate a lot of things he's done, like all of those Obama executive orders that were done even at the last minute of his presidency that were so destructive. The president has signed 11 bills rescinding those regulations, and we could talk, we could do a whole show on those, but also on energy, freeing up energy to be developed in this country and the right way. The Keystone Pipeline, the XL Pipeline, the Dakota Access Pipeline, I mean, that's pretty stunning. They've been trying to get those things built for, I don't know, has it been a decade? It's been a long time. It's been years. And he actually is letting those things move forward. That's huge.
It is huge. And it's a, you know, it sends shockwaves to the system when he says, you know, first of all, the federal government shouldn't have any real say in terms of turning on whether or not a pipeline is able to be built or not. But the Obama administration interjected themselves into the Keystone XL because it crossed the Canadian border. The Dakota Access Pipeline, they interjected because it crossed state lines. You know, Donald Trump said, you know, here's the thing. This is delivering energy in a cheaper, safer way, and we're not going to get in the way of it. And so he, with a stroke of the pen, undid what Obama had done. And it really goes to the heart of one of the strengths of our constitutional republic, and that is that when one president chooses to do things with a stroke of a pen, another president can undo them. And what a lot of President Trump's activities in the first 100 days have been undoing the pen and phone governance of Obama. Now, you know, I know we have to go back to Congress because ultimately what we need is for Congress to get on the ball and start taking on some of those regulatory issues that President Trump is having to deal with that President Obama did earlier. They need to go in and specifically defund those regulations, giving President Trump protection from the courts, because he will have effectively gotten authorization to move against those regulations from Congress through a defund. So it's really, now is the time when Congress needs to step up and start going after those regulations through the appropriations process and driving the message home that, yes, this is a legislative and an executive branch effort, and the judiciary will not be able to get in the way if that's the case.
Well, Rick, we don't even have time to talk about all the treaties, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Now they're reviewing the Iran deal, the Canada thing over just overnight.
Right.
His national security moves, his really strong attack on ISIS.
The Canadian timber thing is going to be big, Sandy, because he's looking at NAFTA as a whole, but Canadian timber, just so you know, our timber industry in the Northwest has been destroyed because of the Northern Spotted Owl, the crummy decision that it's a threatened species, and we need to fix that. But they've killed the market for Northwestern timber by dumping Canadian softwood timber into the U.S. So not only has the U.S. timber companies been destroyed based on the spotted owl, but they've also been destroyed based on Canadian dumping. And so you have to do both together to restore our vibrancy in that industry in the Northwest and create jobs. And basically they created ghost towns in the Northwest because of the spotted owl, and the timber dumping has made it worse.
So hopefully this will do something about it. And then, of course, the foreign policy. And let me just say that Rick has written this article. We're going to put this on our Facebook page. It's Trump's First 100 Days, A Crash Course in Creative Destruction. And it's excellent. And so, Rick, now I don't have time to talk to you about Congress, but I'll, you know, we're going to catch up later. And I'm anxious to hear what you think about what in the world has happened on this budget negotiation. I know you have a lot of thoughts about it, so you'll have to write, and I'll have to read what you write on the air for my listeners. But Rick Manning, Americans for Limited Government. Rick, great to talk to you. Thank you so much for spending some time with us this morning.
Anytime you need me, Sandy.
All righty. Okay. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
This is Barry McGuire. I'm a car guy, and I love to lead people to Jesus Christ as a layman outside the walls of the church. I often talk with Christians about sharing their faith intentionally in everything they do, and it's interesting how few people admit that they never share their faith, even though the statistics tell us that most don't. Actually, I believe that most of those who don't but say they do are sincere with their remarks. They can't bring themselves to believe that they never share their faith. It's only when I ask them about a specific faith-sharing experience that the real truth comes out. So when was your last faith-sharing experience? If you can't give an immediate answer to that question, you're letting God down. You're robbing yourself of the joy God promises to faith-sharers, and you're ignoring those around you who may be lost for eternity unless you personally intervene. Your job is to ignite revival outside the walls of the church by moving every person you're with today and every day closer to Jesus. And if you want to know how to do that, go to ROTW.com.
Physicians keep learning after medical school in order to better save lives. Shouldn't Christian leaders keep learning to better save souls? Hi, I'm Dr. John Nyhoff, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi, and online around the world. Are you a Christian leader who thinks it's important to keep learning? WBS online weekend and evening classes allow graduate students to become better equipped to make disciples in a constantly changing world. For more information, visit wbs.edu.
Hello, friend. I'm Pastor Ron Jones, and I'm glad to tell you something good has come to American Family Radio. Something Good is a daily half-hour Bible teaching program that I'm hosting at 6:30 p.m. Central Time. In a world full of so much bad news, we're glad to bring you something good. Learn more at somethinggoodradio.org. That's somethinggoodradio.org.
This is a T&C Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. The first recorded account of good versus evil came in the Garden of Eden when the devil asked, "Did God really say?" And bam, moral relativism was born. Make no mistake, there is good and there is evil. There is the sacred and the profane, and God is the one who defines these things. Very few people intentionally teach their children these differences, neither by talking with them nor by their lives, while many public schools advertently and inadvertently teach our children that moral good and evil are but mere opinion. Parents and grandparents, use every moment wisely, instructing the children in your life about good and evil according to the Word of God. Proverbs 22:6 explains, "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it." This is a Decency Minute. Find us at AmericanDecency.org. I'm Bill Johnson.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Official Washington insists that the Trump presidency's first 100 days have been a bust, but that's the swamp talking, the bipartisan establishment legislators, leftist bureaucrats, and their allies in the media. They are delighted to have thwarted parts of Mr. Trump's agenda. Worse yet, they got the president to accede to their blocking some of his promised swamp-draining changes. The latest example is his agreement to defer funding for his wall along the southern border. Fortunately, Mr. Trump can swiftly and inexpensively improve security along the Texas border by reactivating a network of military-grade cameras already in place there. This blue servo system could be quickly installed elsewhere. The swamp won't like it, neither will the terrorists and narco-traffickers taking advantage of our porous border. But the American people will recognize this as a real and much-needed 100-day accomplishment. This is Frank Affney. Learn more at blueservo.com.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Brett, good evening. Republicans dropped money for a border wall in the latest offer, but are demanding increases in defense spending and border security. Late today, President Trump said he's not giving up on the border wall permanently.
The wall's going to get built, and the wall is going to stop drugs, and it's going to stop a lot of people from coming in that shouldn't be here.
Taking the border wall off the table for now seemed to ease tension in the talks, and the hope is a deal can be struck.
I don't want to start talking about a short-term CR on a Tuesday. We're hoping to reach an agreement in the next few days on how to process the entire bill through September 30th.
The Senate Democratic leader took credit for setting that campaign promise aside.
Senator McConnell wanted me to negotiate the wall with President Trump.
I said to him two things. First, it's not a negotiation, no wall. And second, I said, only you can persuade him that he shouldn't do the wall because it'll cause a government shutdown.
Some Republicans are blasting Schumer and other Democrats for voting in 2013 to commit about $40 billion to border enforcement measures as part of comprehensive immigration reform, including completing 700 miles of fencing. But now they're resistant to President Trump's call for the wall at the border.
I suppose because they don't want this president to have a victory on that, and that's really petty and peevish and partisan.
Schumer appeared to negotiate late yesterday on the Senate floor.
In reality, a combination of drones and fencing and other more sophisticated means would be a much more effective way to secure the border.
Yeah, because, of course, Chuck Schumer really wants to secure that border, right? They've proven that for the last, 10-plus years of doing nothing. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk, which brings us back to what we talked about with Rick a few minutes ago about this whole business of, see, the reason why, well, okay, this is the reason why the Republicans give. I can tell you there are other reasons, but the reason why they say they can't do this budget, they have to give, they just must give the Democrats what they want. Chuck Schumer says no border wall. No, nothing. No border wall. No funding for that. It's a poison pill. And they go, oh, if we don't agree with the Democrats, we just can't. Why? Oh, my gosh, we'll have to shut. The government will shut down. They'll blame us. We can't do that. So here we go. Have you heard this before? I think a few times. And the reason why they're so scared is because of these so-called filibuster, which means that the Republicans would have to, under the current rules, get 60 votes in the Senate to pass any funding. It's a continuing resolution. It's the name of the funding bill, continuing resolution. So that's why it's important what I just talked with Rick about. If they could do away with the filibuster on legislation rather than just on judicial nominations at a time when the country is in such great crisis, and when I believe that the Democratic Party has been so co-opted by the left that they do not have the best interests of this country at heart anymore, it's time to do away with that filibuster. But the problem is further complicated by the fact that the Republican leadership really, I think it could be argued, are on the same side as the Democrats, is certainly on the border wall. And I will give you... I've said this before, but I'll repeat it because I think it's important. Paul Ryan, Speaker of the House, who just can't quite get that budget with that border wall. That border wall funding is just, you know, we just can't fund the government, and it'll shut down if we fund that border wall, so we just can't do it. And of course, otherwise he would, right? Otherwise, Speaker Ryan would really rush out to fund that border wall, right? Well, not so much, because, you know, he is the guy that went on the campaign trail with Luis Gutierrez. Look up Luis Gutierrez. He is a congressman from Chicago. He is a leftist socialist who is all about open borders, and they agree. He and Paul Ryan agreed on the immigration plan. They wanted to do the Gang of Eight bill, and so Speaker Ryan was trying to help him, and they went around the country trying to persuade people. So this is where Paul Ryan, he's always been bad on immigration, so don't think for a minute that if he had the chance, he would actually, unless he were made to, had his nose held in it, just like with Obamacare. He's not really, he doesn't want to get rid of Obamacare, doesn't want to. They could have done it. They had a bill that they passed when they knew the president wouldn't sign it, meaning Obama. But now that they could actually have a president sign it, they can't, you know, they just can't quite... you know, do away with Obamacare because you fill in the blanks. And so we have a leadership that's actually working against this president. Now, the disappointing thing to me is that the president capitulated on the wall. Now, they say they're going to do it later, next fall. You know what? They always say that, don't they? We'll do that next time. Oh, we can't do that now because the government will shut down. We'll do that next time. Well, so obviously, Reince Priebus, you know, advising the president, convinced him Mr. President, don't ask for that now. We'll do that next August. We'll get it in there next August. Now, really, you think that Speaker Ryan and Mitch McConnell are going to be interested in driving? And that Chuck Schumer is going to change his mind? Are they going to be different people and different bodies next late summer? I don't think so. I totally think that the president should have used his muscle to have a showdown on this. I think that it should be very clear to the American people who voted for President Trump because, for in part, they wanted the border safe from MS-13, from drugs, Islamists coming over the border, and then last but not least, the thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of illegal immigrants who've come across the border in the last few years. They voted for that. And so it's kind of important. And I would love to have seen a showdown over that. Let's have a showdown over that. And by the way, when the government shuts down, so-called non-essential workers don't have to come. Just the essential workers have to come. And I'm just saying, how about if we took names about who the non-essential workers were, and maybe that would help us glean out these agencies. We would know who was necessary and who wasn't. I have to tell you, my husband, I'm going to use his name here, has been working for a federal agency, which I won't mention, it's not the FBI. And the waste that he is seeing firsthand, the laziness, people sitting around playing cards, leaving early, I mean, in mass, he is just appalled. Because this is the federal workforce. So let them stay home. Let the government shut down. Let's take names, keep the essential workers, and let the rest of them go on leave permanently. You know, I know I'm being simplistic here because you can't just let federal workers go. You got to think of something clever. But something can be done, and I think this president would do it. I don't know why they weren't willing to fight, but they weren't. And so it's very disappointing. I would like to have seen this president show the same muscle on this that he's shown to the international community, saying, if you do this, I'm going to do this. And they saw very clearly when he dropped that bomb on ISIS and when he bombed in Syria, the airport, the world saw that he meant what he said. The congressional leaders need to see that Donald Trump means what he says. They don't take him seriously, and they're not going to take him seriously again if he doesn't hold their feet to the fire. So that's my thought about that. And by the way, before we run out of time here, Senator Cruz introduced a brilliant thing yesterday called the Al Chapo Act. You may know that Al Chapo is it's a bill that would reserve any amounts forfeited to the U.S. government as a result of the criminal prosecution of Al Chapo, formerly named Joaquin Archivaldo Guzman Loria, and other drug lords for border security assets and the completion of the wall along the U.S.-Mexican border. The U.S. government is currently seeking the criminal forfeiture of more than $14 billion in drug proceeds and illicit profits from El Chapo, the former leader of the Sinaloa drug cartel, who was recently extradited to the U.S. to face criminal prosecution for numerous alleged drug-related crimes, including conspiracy to commit murder and money laundering. Bottom line, El Chapo is in our custody. We have $14 billion in drug proceeds that we could access, and Senator Ted Cruz says, fine, then let's access them and build the wall. So expect to hear about that today. I hope, we'll hope you hear about it. I guess you'll have to listen to Fox if you're going to hear about it. And maybe even not then, because we know that this is not an area that Fox has been great on. As a general rule, there are pockets like Lou Dobbs and Sean Hannity who are good on this issue of enforcing our immigration laws, but some of them are not. So you have to be careful who you listen to. It's a pleasure to talk to you, and I want you to know that the president is introducing his tax cut plan today. So that'll be interesting, too. They're predicting that he's going to ask for a 15% corporate tax rate down from 35. Well, that will be a huge jolt, I mean in a good way, to the economy. If businesses have their taxes cut, they'll be able to hire, start building, bring jobs. That would make a huge difference. Let's just see what happens. Maybe a federal judge will stop this one, too. This is Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.